Good morning again from New York City. My name is Aphrodita Krasnichi, and I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Officer for the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program for the Institute of International Education based in New York City. Thank you all for joining us again, and I understand that you can all hear us and see us clearly. So thank you for responding to that. I am joined here today by Ms. Ana Guerra Pereira, Senior Program Manager for the Fulbright U.S. For the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Awards at the UK, U.S.-UK Fulbright Commission in London, the UK. Good afternoon, Ana, and thank you for dedicating this afternoon to the Fulbright program.
Hello. Hi, all.
Thank you, Ana. Also, we are honored to have with us Dr. Heidi Brevig-Zender, Fulbright U.S. Scholar to the U.K. in 2017-2018. Dr. Brevig-Zender, would you like to introduce yourself and say hi to the participants?
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And we do appreciate, we know it's very early in California right now, and we are now doing this presentation with three panelists in three different time zones, so London, New York, and California. So thank you all. All right, so let's start with our information session about the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. A little bit of history, just so that you get a sense of how this all fits into your application. So the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program was founded in 1946 by the U.S. Senator J. William Fulbright. The program started as a small program in Burma, and it grew over the years, and now we're celebrating almost 73 years of its existence. So Fulbright program was established to increase mutual understanding between people of the United States and people, other people in the world. So think about this component as you try to start and craft your application, because this is very important. It is funded by the U.S. Department of State, the Educational and Cultural Affairs Bureau, co-funded with partnership institutions abroad, overseen by Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board and administered by IIE in the U.S., whereas overseas the program is administered by the either Fulbright Commissions or the U.S. Embassies. So just so you know, in the U.K., the program, like we mentioned earlier, is administered by the Fulbright Commission in the U.K. Furthermore, just to, for you to get an idea how big the program is, as it is considered also one of the most prestigious programs in the world with the biggest number of recipients. So many world leaders are Fulbright alumni, and for example, the current president of Croatia, prime minister of Slovenia, and many, many others. And if you are selected to do a Fulbright program, you are certainly part of a big family, a great network of successful people. So just as an illustration to that, you see here like how many participants have gone on this program in both ways, like gone abroad, and also how many Fulbrighters came to the U.S. And we do send about 800 U.S. scholars annually. And you see how many countries are participating in the program and so forth. It is very important to keep in mind that a Fulbright program is very inclusive and strives to ensure that it reflects the diversity of the U.S. And so we encourage the involvement of people from various different backgrounds and also in particular underrepresented audience. So The Fulbright program does not discriminate and is open regardless of the race, color, national origin, and so forth. So it is a very inclusive program. Eligibility for becoming a Fulbright U.S. scholar, first of all, it is very important to keep in mind that you have to be a U.S. citizen to be eligible for a Fulbright U.S. scholar program. And then the degree is different, requirements are different, and they vary by award to award. Some awards are specific, they require PhD or other terminal degrees. So depending on your discipline, they might also accept the terminal degree. Many awards are open to applicants also with master degree or as long as you have a sufficient academic experience or professional experience. And the program has evolved over the years since 1946. It is open to professionals and artists outside of academia. And this is especially would be noted on the award description. And then some awards will require a number of years of teaching experience. And then there are also new policies of how many Fulbrights you can get. So if you did a last Fulbright, let's say in 2017 in June, you have to wait until June 2019 to be eligible to apply for another award. So there are no limits to how many awards and how many Fulbrights can one get. A little bit of statistics. So you see the Fulbright Youth Scholar Program dominates here. In 2018-2019, there were 93% Fulbright Youth Scholars who attended the program, and 7% were attendees of International Education Administrative Seminars, because we do offer also opportunities for administrators. And how would you select the right award? First of all, you want to look at matching your expertise and proposal to the what you're planning to do. So you want to look at that first, and then the experience that is required. And also, if you do have a regional experience, you want to highlight that. Like, for example, if you were in the country before, and then how is that experience going to help you in the Fulbright program? And then make sure you also look at the discipline preferences, because sometimes we do have many awards also in the UK are partnership awards, but then they would specify sometimes the discipline preferred, but sometimes they're open to all disciplines. And then why is this particular project important to the UK? Why do you need to go to the UK? And how will the host country and the host institution benefit from your project? Again, pay attention to the career level requirements, because there are some opportunities for early career up to the Distinguished Chair Awards. So just to also illustrate, like, we do receive many questions from applicants interested to apply in the UK. And like many times, like, they would say, is my discipline represented? And just so that we also remind everyone, the Fulbright competition opened in February 2019, and the application deadline is September 16, 2019. So this year, the deadline has been extended, and it will give you enough time to put together a very competitive application. Applicants must apply to only one specific award in the UK. And in a minute, we'll take a look at how to run searches in the catalog and review individual award descriptions. So, you know, there are also other questions like, are there opportunities for early career scholars? And what if I don't have contact at my preferred host institution? And how do I get a letter of invitation? So we will get the help of Anna from the UK Commission to answer some of these questions later on. So now we do have, for example, this, we can show you how you would run a basic search on our website. And we can talk a little bit about this just quickly, to go to our website and how to navigate and search for our for the awards in the UK. So this is our website, CIS.org, and then we would go to the browse the award catalog, and we will be selecting the country here. So we go to United Kingdom. You can even filter by discipline or region, I mean for other regions, but you would start here just to get a sense of how many awards. There are 34 awards found on the United Kingdom catalog of awards. So, Anna, you would like to would you like to share something about this? But definitely, you can filter them by the discipline here, and then by activity that you want to pursue, whether it's a professional project, research, or teaching, research, seminar, teaching, and so on. Then you would filter them by the grant length, and you see here there are different times to conduct your activity, the degree requirement. You would filter them whether the PhD is required or not. Then the category here, you will see that we do offer opportunities from Distinguished Chair and then to Postdoc Award. There are no opportunities for higher education administrators in the UK, I believe.
So,
yeah, the professional profile is open to academics, and then open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. And then, very important, if the letter invitation is required or not. So these are the searching mechanisms which are very user-friendly and will help you navigate through our awards. Anna, would you like to just highlight one of the awards so that we can show them further how to look for, you want to share any tips?
I mean, you can do the Fulbright Cancer Research UK Scholar Award, which we will talk about. It's one of our newest awards.
So, yeah, this is one of the very new awards, or this is the second year that they're offering this award. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you want to share some tips about, recommendations about this particular award?
So I would just to, before talking specifically about cancer research, I just want to, we will be highlighting a few of our 34 U.S. Scholar Awards soon, but I just want to say that the majority of our awards in UK are actually partner awards. So just like the Cancer Research UK, they are funded by specific partners of the Fulbright Commission, mostly UK universities. In the case of Cancer Research UK, it's an organization that's not necessarily a higher education institution. Most of our awards are open to all level of scholars, including early career. But obviously we do have quite a few visiting professorships and distinguished chair awards that are for more senior academics. I would say just have a look at that because we do have, as you said, we do have a lot of different awards. You need to look at them in terms of like finding one that might be of, UK university that might be of more interest to you or a better fit for your research. I want to say something about letters of invitation. It's not an option in the UK. So all our awards require a letter of invitation from your proposed UK host. And if you don't have or can't identify a prospective academic contact or faculty member at that institution, for most of our partner awards, you can find under, I think, award requirements, correct? You can find under the award requirements tab the partner contact email address.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you are welcome to drop them an email requesting a letter or asking for advice on who would be the best person to approach at the institution for that invitation letter. So that's with most of our awards. The other thing I would like to remind you as we were talking about timelines is that you should give your UK contacts enough time to write the support letter you need to submit with your application, because ideally you should contact them as early as possible, as soon as you have put together your project proposal and know that you will be submitting an application for a particular award. It's just because July and August, so the last 2 months of the competition, is when most UK academics and administrative contacts are on holiday, and we know that it is harder to get in touch with them. People take longer to get back to you, so if you can make that contact earlier, it would be better for you, and you'll get the letter earlier for sure.
Thank you, Anna. Thank you. We appreciate your information, and we're going to continue because we have so many awards. Like we mentioned, UK has different awards, and this is great opportunity because you can choose from a variety of awards. And then we just highlighted the Fulbright Cancer Research Scholar Award, and from our website also we saw that the number of grants that is given, usually most of the or all of the UK awards would be selecting one participant. Right, Anna?
Yes. The only one that there's two awards available is the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award. We have two awards. I'll talk about it.
Okay. And just for the applicants, so you have all these resources here, the award requirements, the award benefits, and the country area overview. So you would find, like here, for example, there is a hyperlink about Cancer Research UK Award, and then when you click on that, it will take you to their website and see you will find the contact there. Then if you want to pay attention to also the requirements, the degree requirement, PhD or other terminal degrees required, and the application deadline, like we mentioned, is September 16 for most of the, for all of the UK awards. Then you can always contact me. I'm the point of contact to help you and guide you through the application process. Do not hesitate to call me. Here's my office number or send me an email at europeeurasia@iie.org. So just to highlight some other wonderful awards that UK offers, Anna, you want to continue and give us some tips and also insight on the next awards.
Yes, I just want to mention something about the Fulbright Cancer Research UK. So this is one of our newest awards, as I said, and sponsored by Cancer Research UK, which is, the world's leading charity dedicated to cancer research and also the largest independent funder of cancer research in Europe. We are very happy to have this partnership, and this award is tenable at any UK university. So you can propose to do research. It's for research only, 3 to 12 months, open to academics only, but all levels, including early career. And basically, you can choose any UK university to base your project on, but it will be funded by Cancer Research UK. And there's more information. Obviously, there are some priority areas in cancer research that we would like to see in the proposals, but you can look at that on the catalog. So the next award I would like to highlight is the Fulbright Loughborough University Award. This is an all disciplines award and has been running for quite a few years. It is in all disciplines for 3 to 12 months for a research project in any subject or a combination of multiple subjects at Loughborough University. Scholars may also undertake teaching in this award if they want to. It's not mandatory. This depends on whatever you discuss with your potential host. Just a little bit about Loughborough University. It was this year, 2019, ranked in the top 10 of UK universities in each of the most recent national league tables. And Loughborough University is located in the East Midlands of England. But in 2015, they also opened a second campus on Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park in London, where they have now 7 research institutes, including international management, sport business, innovation and entrepreneurship, design innovation, and digital technologies, among others. So it could be the awards could be tenable at their campus in London. Overall, there are like 5 very well-established research areas at Loughborough, for those who don't know so much about the university. The 5 beacons are the major research strengths of the university: the built environment, sports and exercise, communication and culture, high-value manufacturing, and transport technologies. Overall, Loughborough ranks highly for engineering and technology research, has strong links with business and industry, and it is very well known in the UK and Europe for its excellence in sports-related courses and research. And yeah, it's open to academics and qualified professionals outside academia. So all levels, again, including early career scholars. Can we go to the next one. Yes. So the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award, which we mentioned, there are two awards available. This is an award, obviously discipline specific, but also tenable at any UK university. So Cancer Research UK and Fulbright Cybersecurity Award are the only two awards we have right now, along with the Fulbright Schumann Scholar Award, that can be tenable at any university. All our other awards are partnered awards with universities, and you can only go to those universities. But basically, the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award was announced in 2015, has been running since 2016-17, it was announced as part of a cybersecurity package with cooperation between the US and UK governments at the time. Since then, we've had 11 cybersecurity US scholars in UK, and as I said, there are two awards available for 2020-21. The award is basically designed to enable academic or professional experts in cybersecurity to undertake research, pursue professional development, or to access best practice at any UK institution for a period of 3 to 6 months. A PhD is not required, and the award is open to all level of scholars and all appropriately qualified professionals in the area of cybersecurity. As you can see, applications are sought in all appropriate disciplines, but the applications in the following specializations are preferred: computer science, information sciences, law, mathematics, and public administration. As we mentioned, Aphrodita and I mentioned that we have several Distinguished Chair Awards and Scotland Visiting Professorships. Dr. Heidi Brevik-Zender had a Scotland Visiting Professorship. So these are more senior awards, and I would like to highlight one of our oldest visiting professorships in Scotland, the Scotland Visiting Professorship at the Glasgow School of Art. This award is fully funded by the Glasgow School of Art, which is known in the UK as GSA, and GSA is one of Europe's leading university-level institutions for visual arts and creative disciplines. So the award is to teach. It's a teaching and research award. That's the main focus. At any GSA any of the GSA's academic schools, it is for 6 months. PhD is not required, and the award is open to all levels of academic scholars and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia, except early career academics. So applications are sought mainly in the following disciplines: architecture, contemporary art, design, digital visualization. This is all listed in the catalog as well. And so this visiting professorship is specific to a discipline, and I would just like to add that we do have a couple of awards, although most of our awards are for all disciplines. We do have a couple of awards that are specifically within the arts and creative arts, visual arts disciplines, like this one, and also the University of York History of Art Award and the University of Dundee Art and Design Award. Obviously, anyone who wants to do a project in these areas can apply for an all disciplines award at another institution. And then finally, would like to highlight another one of our awards that is discipline specific and has been running also for quite a few years, the Fulbright Lancaster University STEM Science and Technology Award, which is for research only. So Lancaster is one of only 6 collegiate universities in England and has very strong connection with businesses. They work with over 1,000 businesses, and they place great emphasis on a strong student experience. This award is tenable only at the Science and Technology Faculty, which hosts a number of research centers, and the project can be based in any of those. It is for 3 to 6 months, and the research project can be focused in any of the following disciplines and all related specializations: chemistry, computer science, engineering, environmental sciences, geology, information sciences, mathematics, physics, and astronomy. Just want to highlight that candidates in the biological sciences, medical, and life sciences are not eligible for this award, due to specifics arrangements with the host university. But as I said, although most of the awards highlighted today are for specific fields of study. The majority of our partner awards are actually for all disciplines. So yeah, do check the catalog for all the options, and I will be here to answer any other questions, any questions you might have at the end. So I'll pass on to Heidi, I think, now.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can all hear you. Thank you, Anna, for the presentation, for sharing the details and tips about the award we highlighted. Now I would like to give the floor to our alumni, Dr. Heidi Brevig-Zender, and to tell us more about her recent experience in the UK.
Hi, thank you so much. Hello, everyone. So yes, my name is Heidi Brevig-Zender, and you hopefully can see an image of me there. I wanted to say that that is me outside of my office at the University of Aberdeen, and I noticed here that, I saw the picture. I can see it. So I noticed here that whoever put this slide together did a really good job in lightening it up a bit, because the reality is the image is actually quite dark because there was really not very much light there up in the Scottish Highlands when I first arrived. And that I wanted to sort of begin with that because that was an important part of the experience was being there. In Scotland, in a place that is so different from where I normally find myself, which is Southern California. And so I thought that the image would sort of convey that. But anyway, can I just ask, can people hear me? Is the sound okay? Hello?
Hi, Dr. Brevig-Zender, can you hear me? We can hear you clearly.
Okay, perfect.
In New York.
Okay, excellent.
So, you have, thank you for sharing already some of the information. And the next slide, you will have also some more information that we received from you about your experience. So, whenever you're ready, I can move to the next slide.
Okay, excellent. I think that that would be fine if you want to go ahead and do that. So I was asked to talk just a little bit about my experience working as a Fulbright Scholar, a visiting professor at the university, and also to give just a little bit of perspective on what I think might go into a successful proposal. First, I want to just say at the beginning that I encourage everyone who is interested to apply. It was not really something that I was thinking about doing, to be honest, and then I had, there were a number of people on my campus who were recipients of Fulbright scholarships and visiting professorships, and that suddenly made it seem all very feasible to me, and so I got very interested in the different opportunities that were available, and so I do encourage people absolutely to apply and to look at the options. I had strong mentoring from previous Fulbright scholars on my campus, so if you have someone available to you who has had a Fulbright before, I would suggest trying to get in touch with them to get some of their feedback and perspective on it. So I wanted to say that the very first line that I wanted to put on this slide was that I wanted to talk about my experience working in French studies in the UK, because the first question that most people ask me is, why did you go to Scotland if you're in French studies? So it's true that my area of research is 19th century France. I work on literature, visual culture, and material culture, and I'm currently working on my main research project is on women in architecture in 19th century in France. And the answer to this, I think, ties into what made my proposal a successful one, which is that there was a team of researchers working at the University of Aberdeen who worked on very similar areas to my own. I had a collaborator already there, and then there were a network of three other scholars who were working in areas of research that were similar to mine. And so working sort of in conjunction with them was, I think, very helpful for me in justifying why it is that I needed to go specifically to the University of Aberdeen and what benefits I would be able to find there. So I had also been to the university prior to the Fulbright year for a conference. So I had been there, I knew where it was, and I knew my way around the university a little bit. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the next point is that I wanted to say that I made some very some excellent research connections while I was there, not just at the University of Aberdeen, but while I was in Aberdeen, I traveled around a lot in the UK, in Scotland and across the UK. I gave 7 scholarly talks, also in Europe. I was able to make progress on my book manuscript, and I also was able to cultivate a relationship with the collaborator that I knew a little bit before going over that really developed into a future research project that we're sort of in the middle of working on right now. And this research project involves a very important photography archive at the University of Aberdeen called the George Washington Wilson Photography Collection. And this was a collection that I was very interested in examining and studying. So I was able to do that while I was there in Scotland. And this collaborator and I have been now planning an exhibit whereby we are going to take these photographs across Scotland, hopefully into England as well, and then finally take them to California, where we're going to have an exhibit at the University of California Riverside campus, which is my home institution. So these were just some of the, just very briefly, I'm mentioning some of the wonderful benefits that that came to me from being a Fulbright scholar there in Aberdeen. And so maybe I could talk a little bit about what I think might go into a successful proposal. I would say, again, yeah, so the next part I think is important, these specific connections with the university and the faculty there. And Anna mentioned this a little bit about the importance of the letter from the host institution, and I think that is very important. That was something that I worked on with the letter writer, who was the chair of the school of in which where the French department is housed at the university, and he and I corresponded, of course, and we also had a few Skype conversations, so we were able to discuss, you know, what kinds of contributions I would make to their department and ways in which we were a good fit for one another, which are things that he could highlight in the letter that he was writing for me and that I could bring to the fore in my own application. So I guess that's sort of number two there, strong support from the sponsor and the host institution as well. And then the third thing I would say, which is just a general word of advice, is to make the narrative about the project as jargon-free as possible. You're speaking to a wide audience of scholars, so they don't necessarily know anything about your discipline. And the more that you can do to make the project meaningful to a lot of different kinds of people coming from a lot of different scholarly perspectives, I think the better your application is.
Thank you, Dr. Brevik-Zender. That's great experience, and thank you for sharing the tips on how to make a successful proposal, because this is what we're looking for also today. And it's really nice to hear from you, and thank you for, again, for your time and waking up so early to share this. Just to continue with, you know, how to make a successful application, you have to focus on so many of the components and requirements. As probably you're aware by now, that the application is has a lot of moving parts. So there is the online application form, which you will register your profile, and then if you are eligible, because it will ask you a few questions in the beginning, if you are eligible, it will let you continue. Because sometimes we get many inquiries from Fulbrighters who just returned maybe and still haven't met the 2 years policy, they want to go again because it's such a great experience. They really can't wait, you know, to apply again. But unfortunately, you have to wait for 2 years to be eligible for it again. So then the other important, a very important component is the project statement. This is where you need to shine. This is where you need to tell us why Fulbright, why you, and why the UK. So does this project have to be in the UK? Does it make sense? And how is the host institution going to benefit from it? So we just heard Dr. Brevik Zender that she, even though she's in the French studies, her project still made sense in the UK. So if you can provide a justification rationale for that, that will make a strong application. So the CV or resume should be tailored according to the requirements and also summarized so that you definitely bring to a forward and highlight all the strengths you have to be competitive. Then the letter of references, we require 3 letters of references. So if you're applying for a teaching award, one of the letters has to be from your home institution, like the dean or the vice dean, someone who can attest of your teaching ability. Then another one can be from an international collaborator if you've done collaborations with other researchers or university professors from other countries. Then you want to show just how well you can work with other people from other countries. So that's also a strong component. Additional components are depending, again, on the award. So if you're applying for a teaching award, we require that you send, that you upload to your application the syllabi or the course outline. So it should be a syllabi that you're using in the U.S., but you want to make sure you adjust it a bit to the needs of the faculty. So this you will learn if you are in touch with the university or the host. Select bibliography for only research awards. So you would need to provide us with the resources that you're going to use during your research. So for language proficiency report, we will skip this. It's not needed for the UK, but for all other countries, depending on the requirements. A letter of invitation is, again, very important because it will show the endorsement from your host institution. So as we mentioned earlier, Anna mentioned, that letters of invitations are required for all of the UK awards. So you want to start the conversation now. So even though it sounds like you have enough time, still it's good to start the conversation up because, first of all, you want to see, you want to learn if the host institution is interesting in hosting you and if your project is feasible in that university or that institution. And then if you're applying for other disciplines like the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism, you're required to submit supplemental materials. That means samples of your work. Like if you're applying for architecture award, then we would need to see samples of your work. Because ultimately, these applications are going to be reviewed by discipline committees in the process. The project statement, as we just briefly mentioned, this is where, again, you need to provide rationale why Fulbright and why this country, why institution and organization. So focus here on what you plan to do and the specific courses you plan to teach and the methods and goals of your research. How is this project going to benefit not just the host, but also the home institution and you personally and professionally? And again, focus on highlighting how adaptable are you in living in new environment, new country. Because if you lived abroad before, you should highlight that as that will show that you can adjust easily in new environment. And, you know, how well would you be dealing with challenging situations? As UK is one of the most developed countries in Europe, you know, it's still, you would have a great infrastructure and other things that life will be basically more or less similar to the U.S., but still, you know, in a different culture, how you plan to adjust. The other thing, so we mentioned the affiliations and invitations, if the host is identified, So you can find it on the under the location in the catalog. As we mentioned, most of the UK awards are partnership awards, and so you would definitely have the name of the university and then just go there to look for the contact to reach out. Also, like Dr. Brevik-Zander mentioned, it is very important that you get the feedback from previous alumni who went to the UK. We do provide the Fulbright Scholar directory here, and you can just filter them by the country, the United Kingdom, and all the list, the long list will come up. So the letter of invitation is not a contract. So this is just an endorsement you will be receiving from the host institution. And they might be issuing like a couple of letters of invitation to other applicants as well. But it is important that before you agree for them to issue this letter, that they highlight the impact that you will have on the host, on this institution. And it should come from the person with whom you will be collaborating and also the person who has the authority to invite you. So the dean has to know or the vice dean has to be aware of this collaboration if the person is not like the dean or the vice dean of that institution. It should be on the host institution letterhead, and then they will just scan it and email it to you, and then you will upload it to your application, online application. Again, you're very important to address the Fulbright goal of promoting mutual understanding, because that is the goal of the Fulbright program, to strengthen relationships between the U.S. and the U.K. in this case. And why do you need to apply for a Fulbright, and why the U.K.? That is very important. What are you bringing, something unique, your professional expertise and skills, so that it will benefit the host and the host institution? And remember, this is an exchange experience. As much as you will learn from your UK colleagues, they will also learn from you. So it's a cultural diplomacy, it's people-to-people diplomacy. So you have to demonstrate flexibility and adaptability. And then at the end, the outcomes and the multiplier effect, basically for your personal or professional development, how is your home campus or your home institution going to benefit from this, and the students, will your curriculum be enriched after this experience, and you know, are you planning to open doors for further collaborations or linkages between these two universities? And then how are you going to address internationalizing your campus and the curriculum? So now some schools in the U.S. already, like most of them, have the study abroad office or international studies, but then you want to also find out from them what is the status of your school in this term, and just to get some information on that. So we do provide the resources, as we mentioned earlier, the catalog of awards and our website. So I'm going to just go back to the catalog of awards once again and show you, like, this is our homepage, and then you would be, again, searching for the United Kingdom, and this is where you search, and so you would search all the awards. Now, we can check another award, let's say, Anna, you want to pick another award, because I really want to just show them another way how to search for all the features that we provide in our on our website, because you have a lot of information here, a lot of dense information. You just have to learn how to navigate through our website.
Any words, I guess.
Okay. So
it can be Queen Mary. You can do Queen Mary if you want.
Yeah, because it's unique. It's multidisciplined. So here, again, you want to focus, like, all of the awards have these features, and once you open it, you would see here the grant activity. It would be described here. So it's a research opportunity, because it's also highlighting here that it's a research opportunity, and it's you would be, again, submitting bibliography for this award, so the resources you will use. And the more information you will find here about the grant length. Now, you have to keep in mind your project, can be 3 months to 9 months, depending on whose department. And your project proposal has to reflect this. So it can be 2 months or it can be 10 months. It has to be within these parameters. Then the grant dates are even more specific, and then you have to really match this. The location is at the Queen Mary University of London in England. They do not provide the flex option. The flex option is an opportunity for you to travel back and forth within the stretch of 2 years. So at least if you stay in the country for at least 1 month. So they do not provide this option here.
None of our awards, I mean, I think it's worth saying, none of the UK awards provide the flex option, unfortunately. So.
Thank you for mentioning that. That's important to know. And then only applications in the following disciplines will be considered. So only in this, the science and engineering and medicine and dentistry. And then it has even more information. You want to pay close attention to it. So as we mentioned, category, this is open to all level of scholars, including early career. So early career means less than 5 years of teaching or research experience post-PhD. And then the program staff, I'm responsible for the UK for outreach and recruitment, so you can again contact me. The other very important tab, the second tab, award requirements, like we mentioned, UK requires letters of invitation for all of the awards. And then we do even provide here contact, who to contact to get the letter. And then when you reach out to them, you should probably get a response within like 1 week or two, right, Anna?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
then
Sorry.
If you don't hear from them, you want to also reach out to them again and see if that is, you know, working. But they're aware of the Fulbright opportunities, and because this is a partnership award, so, you know, you just have to be a little bit of patient and until they respond. So more information provided here. This is open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. And more information can be found here, the website, the links to Fulbright UK Commission. Then the award benefits, this is how much you would be getting, and then special award benefits are listed here. Country area overview is just general information about the UK and some more helpful links, and also an email contact if you can contact Fulbright Commission or Anna for more information. Now,
You can always contact us if you email a partner. As Aphrodita said, partners will be very aware. All the contact email addresses that you have there are people who are very aware of this these awards, so they should get back to you. But if they do take longer than you expect, you can always email us on the Fulbright programs at fulbright.org.uk, and we can chase that as well for you.
The other very important feature that is application guidelines will take you here, and then it will show you from A to Z what it takes to make a competitive application. So we do provide even instructions here. And then the online application is here, so you can just click here and register. But then please, I would strongly recommend that you download the instructions and print them out, and that should be like your guidance book throughout your application until you submit it. Then the project statement requirements, we do provide also sample project statements like from previous Fulbrighters, and you want to look at those. Then the resume requirements, recommendation letter requirements. Also, recommendation letters are confidential. You won't see them, but you will just register your recommenders, and then they will submit this on your behalf. Then, again, more information on depending on the grant activity, whether it's research, professional project, whether it's teaching, or a combination of all these three. So this is where you would find more information. And then we do even provide about how to nicely and get the letter of invitation, how to reach out to the new contacts that you don't know. So there's a lot of information here we do provide on our homepage, but also this is where the orange button will take you to the application. So, and again, you do not need to rush to submit the application now, but also you don't want to leave to submit the application like the last 2 weeks before the deadline. So try to, also share your application with some Fulbright scholars or your colleagues, or especially colleagues from another discipline, so that they will see if this is comprehensive, to them, and if that is something that they understand. We do provide webinars, and like this one, this is going to be recorded, and I'm going to send a follow-up message also with the resources once it's archived. And then we do have the Fulbright Scholar blog, which we get a lot of experiences from the previous scholars. Then very important for you to connect to my Fulbright. This is CIES2.org, where you would express your interest in the UK. And then you're part of our listserv and network, and we will be sending you information as the, you proceed in the application process. Then the review process and timeline. So this year, again, we have a different deadline. It's September 16, 2019. And then after you submit your application, the program staff will conduct technical review for completeness. Like if you're missing a letter of invitation or a letter of recommendation, we get back to you, say, you have 1 more week to complete your application. If you do complete it technically, then from October to November, the U.S. peer review will meet, and they will review the application. If you pass this stage, then you will be further recommended to the host country, to the U.K. in this case. And every country works differently, but, from January to April, you will know, this is like the timeline that you would know if you're selected or not. So, if you want to tell us a little bit about the UK, Anna, how is this dynamic working in your country so that applicants can more or less plan with when will they know if they pass the first stage? Yeah.
So the UK is a little bit different from other places in Europe. We are, I think, one of the only commissions, there are others, but not the majority, that interviews candidates. So obviously we are a very competitive program with many awards, as you said, and we interview shortlisted candidates. So in December, as you say, recommended applications are sent to host countries. So we do have an extra level element of selection when we after we receive recommended applications, which involves our partners and also who also read applications and help us shortlist for interviews. So not all recommended applicants will be interviewed or shortlisted for interview. And then at the end of December, usually we are able to let all shortlisted applicants know they've been selected for an interview or they will be called for an interview in January. And interviews usually happen in the last 2 weeks of January or between the 16th of January and the 25th, 26th of January. So we interview not all recommended applicants, but the shortlisted applicants from the recommended pool that we get. And then we usually have, I believe that with the CIS as well, we usually notify everyone by end of February. So candidates will know if they've been selected for the award or not by end of February. And this year, for instance, it was very early that we were able to notify everyone of the results. So we are already in end of March, and everyone for 2019-20, everyone already has their offer letters. So it's by April you'll be confirmed, basically. Everything will be confirmed.
Yeah, thank you, Anna. That's amazing and very impressive considering you have so many awards and you managed to notify everybody by February. So
you also, with the help of you guys this year, that we're able to get all the approvals in time for such an early notification. So, yeah.
Excellent. And also, it's a very important step. When applicants are notified of status, when they pass the U.S. peer review, The recommendation applications are sent to host countries and also to the J. William Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board that finally certifies if you are selected or not. And then if you're selected from May onward, you will be notified of all the other details, logistics, travel, and you would be signing the grant. You know, it's a long process, but as you can see, it's a merit-based competition, and it's a thorough review process. So we appreciate your patience as you proceed in the application process. It is very important that you stay connected with us. Again, we do provide resources to get in touch with us. We have a 24-hour return of emails policy. So whenever you send us an email, I'll make sure to respond to that and provide the resources for you to continue further and answer any questions. Like I mentioned earlier, join my Fulbright at cis2.org. We'll send you notifications about the upcoming webinars, about you know, new developments, and also advising. We do provide webinars about advising in your application. And then visit our website, cis.org, for more information. You can also refer your colleagues. So if you know of anyone else who is also eligible, you can definitely refer them to us, and we will contact them directly. We're very active on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So you can also follow these pages to learn more. So basically, now it's time to take the questions. And I'm happy that we have so many questions. So there is quite a lot of interest for the UK. So first of all, I would like to take the first question and then try to answer that. So the question is, might you clarify the distinction between mid-career and distinguished chair? How might a newly full professor at a small school be defined might not have the publishing record of an R1 distinguished professor but not associate anymore? So Anna, you want to take this question? Or?
Maybe you'll be better positioned to answer such a technical question, but I believe that someone like that could apply for one of the distinguished chairs, to be fair.
So mid-career, like we mentioned, early career is 5 or less years of experience. Mid-career is when you have like more than 5 years of teaching and research experience, and usually distinguished chair is like 10 plus years of teaching and research. So hopefully this answers the question. The other question we have, do we have to specify the courses we'd like to teach? How well does it have to match with the existing courses of the university? So Anna, do you want to...
So this will be for awards that demand teaching and research, and that is something that we expect the candidates to discuss with their host and their host department and the faculty member they have been in touch with. So basically, when we are looking at awards that have the teaching component, like the QV Creative Writing Award or the Irish Literature Award or some of the professorships, you would have to do this background work before submitting your application to talk to the host that will kind of guide you on what's available and what's expected of you in terms of courses and teaching and the level of detail they would like to see in an application. The host would be the main contact in those specific awards. If it's an award that has a teaching component that is an optional component of the awards, that would be, I mean, a very independent proposal from you that you could propose and then be or not accepted by the partner. If it's not a mandatory.
No, I can just say that the award, my award was a teaching and research award, so I did submit syllabi for courses that could work with the program that I was applying for, which was French studies.
Yeah. Thank you, Anna and Dr. Brevigzender, for answering that. Yeah, like Anna mentioned, you need to do a little bit of background work before you define what you want to do. So you need to get in touch with the host and negotiate all the details. The other question when there are opportunities that indicate a variable period of tenure, 3, mostly 1 year, how is that duration judged? In other words, is there a preference for longer or shorter duration tenures?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Not at all. When you have, there are awards that are just for 6 months, like our distinguished chair. It's really not negotiable usually. It has to be 6 months, distinguished chairs, visiting professorships. The other awards that say 3 to 12, 3 to 9, we do not look at duration length proposal. So grant length proposal, that's not something we look at. You can propose between 3 to 9, so it can either be 3 or 9. We are not going to look at that specific part of your application because it does not matter to us. In terms of selection, it's not something we look at. We look at the end when we are going to do an offer, but if it says up to 9, you can propose 9 months. You will have to obviously justify why you need those 9 months and not just 3, but it's not something we really look at.
Yeah, thank you, Anna. And then the other question we have is who reviews the application? So it's the former Fulbrighters. In specific disciplines, they will review these applications. So they are in the U.S. And then if your application is passed on to the U.K., then Anna, maybe you can respond to that.
So in the U.K., we do shortlisting of the recommended applications, and this is usually done with our most of our partner awards. So in terms of the cybersecurity, we have readers in that field that read the applications, the recommended applications, to help us shortlist, so field-specific. And then in terms of the partners, we share all the recommended applications with our partners, and they do have a role in helping us shortlist for interview. Usually partners have a committee that read the applications. I think they depend, the members of those committees depend on each partner, but usually that's the process. And then once we agree on the shortlisted candidates, we interview them, and then we have the interview panel. It's usually Fulbright Commission staff and our also commissioners and some of our alumni scholars also sit in the interview panel. And I should have said this. I keep saying interviews. Obviously, you don't have to do an interview in person. We do interviews over Zoom or Skype.
Thank you, Anna. So we are past 1 hour, but I just want to take a few more questions.
Yes.
And then basically to answer the question, you can apply to only one award per competition cycle. And also the grant dates for each award are different, and you have to just pay close attention to the grant dates that are specified under the award description. And make sure you match those.
Can I just say something about that, about the date? So we are very flexible. Most of our awards, you can start in the UK. You can start them from 1st of September, and then the latest you can start is the end of April the next year. We do have a couple of awards that have a very specific January start dates. You have to do specifically the awards that demand teaching, like the Queen's University Belfast, as I mentioned, creative writing and Irish literature, but it's only 3 or 4 awards that have a specific start date. We usually are quite flexible in terms of when to start the award.
Thank you. And also another question is, I have family reasons for wanting to apply to the UK. Is it okay to disclose this in the application, or should I limit my disclosed interest to professional interest? So basically, this is also a professional and a personal experience. So you really have to justify these both well, and how are you going to benefit from this personally and also professionally. So, you know, Anna, if you want to add more to that.
No, I think that's the answer, yes. it shouldn't be just for personal reasons, but if you can justify both and convince us about why you want to come to the UK, that's perfect what you said.
Great. And then if the UK university I want to go is not among those 34 and I'm not in the area of cybersecurity or cancer research, is there a way I can try to go to that university, or do I have to switch to your university on the west? Anna, this is for you.
So there are 34 awards, we said, but of these 34, only four, are not for specific universities. And those four are the cybersecurity, yes. So basically very specific, discipline-specific, cancer research. And then there's two awards that are the Fulbright-Schumann European Union Affairs Program and the Fulbright-Schumann Innovation Award. These awards are actually managed by our colleagues in Belgium and Luxembourg in the commission there. But you could, again, very discipline-specific, you could go to any UK university. In terms of the other awards, unfortunately, they are specific to UK institutions. We no longer had all what we called all disciplines awards, where you could just make a proposal to go to any UK university. We no longer offer that. So yes, if the institution you want is not on our list, unfortunately, we don't have many options available.
Thank you, Anna. And the last question is from a federal civil servant from NASA, who doesn't have any teaching experience, only research, but not a big publication record. Would my application be competitive for a research teaching position? So again, it depends on the offerings we have, on the discipline, and what you want to do, if your project would make sense. Then for sure, like Anna, if you want to add more to that, there are opportunities for early career, or for research only. But any other things you want to add?
I think that you should still apply and look at your other strengths. And as I said, most of our awards do not demand the teaching element. They have that as an option if you want to add and say that you would like to teach during your Fulbright Award. So I would just recommend looking at all the options and see what would be a better fit. But that wouldn't mean that you wouldn't qualify for a research teaching award and that your application wouldn't be as competitive as others. The teaching element is never, if it's not a specific visiting professorship or an award that is mainly for teaching, it wouldn't mean that your application would still be very competitive.
Thank you so much, Anna, for your time, and thank you so much, Dr. Brevik-Zender, for your time as well. And thank you to all the participants who joined and stayed with us for over one hour, and to learn about the amazing opportunities in the UK. Like I said, this will be archived, and we'll send you the link to the recording. And I wish you all the best in your application in the Fulbright US Scholar Program. Have a nice day.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.